Hello and welcome to Scoppy Radio. My name is Daniel Johansson.
And I'm Maureen Smith. And today we are joined by Laura Smalley, Dinah Fisher, and Anna Caldwell of The Peppermint Patties. How are you doing today?
Hi.
Hello.
How is your day going today?
Oh, pretty well, pretty good.
Well, Chicago came roaring in with a great red line stoppage.
I know. So kind of like weather and traffic of 2 days ago, there's a giant CTA. So if you know, if you're listening to this, well, actually, this is going to go up this afternoon. I hope it's clear by this afternoon.
Me too. I hope so.
Yeah. It's that season, I guess. Well,
but we're here and we're so happy to be here.
We're so excited to be here. It's Christmas is in like a week.
It is. And it's the most wonderful time.
Really fast this year.
So fast.
Like aggressively too fast.
I was talking with some of the I work at the front desk of a music school, and I was talking with some of the parents, and they were like, "I am not done Christmas shopping."
No.
They were like, Santa's it's gonna be last minute Santa this year.
And same.
Yeah.
Same
here. For sure.
No, like, wasn't it just Halloween?
It was. Like, it literally, yeah.
I feel like what's happened is that we're all just ready for 2018 to be over, as a year. Mm-hmm. And so, like, somehow, subconsciously, we've all, like, our subconscious perception of time is all agreed that we're just going to speed it up as quick as possible. But then it's also like,
for sure,
we just decorated our tree yesterday. Moody.
Oh, there's Moody a cat. Is like really needing attention.
He wants to be
Moody
featured.
Moody is not in lap, but she's making herself known.
She's here. We welcome her.
Well, I think before we get into anything else, I think the most productive and important thing for our dear audience would be to get a little context. So, we are here today to talk about the Peppermint Patties, which we're very excited about. So for those that maybe do not know what that is, would you mind giving us a little bit of an introduction?
Absolutely. So the Peppermint Patties is a vocal trio. We have two sopranos and a fabulous mezzo-soprano. And we are all DePaul graduates, so that is where we met. So we've been making music together for a little while. We've known each other for a little while. And this trio was created just a few months ago as a little passion project. We were all gathered around at the Rogers Park Social talking about the things that we have coming up in our lives and with our careers, and we thought, why haven't we done a project together? And this is what happened.
Yeah, it's amazing what happens over a cocktail.
Yeah.
You just like start spewing ideas, especially
all the greatest
after
moments in history are over a cocktail.
Especially after two, we're like, we're gonna do this. We are gung-ho about this.
In the span of about 45 minutes, we had a name.
Yep.
And we had the idea for a Christmas cabaret, and it's all been, you know, just charging on from that moment.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm not going to interrupt.
No,
I just, I think it's important to note that we all are opera singers. Mm-hmm. That is what we all majored in, and that's where we have our basic training. So I think it's pretty cool that we decided to make like kind of a girl band out of that idea. And we're interested and we love opera very much. It's like the core of who we are, but we also love musical theater and jazz and just experimenting vocally and experimenting with new music. So that's kind of who we are.
It's kind of wild because, so we were talking with a friend of ours who, I'm thinking of Peter Dragley, who was talking about he's done like, you know, most young artist programs. I couldn't name them because I don't have the like catalog of it.
He's done like Santa Fe. He's a regular at Winter Opera St. Louis. Mm-hmm.
The biggies.
And like very much and has done this exceedingly well. The like classical concept of like singular focused.
Yeah.
Like I'm going to do this thing. It's going to be my life. I'm going to only think about opera all the time. And that's very much, you know, if you came up singing opera in the last couple decades, like in school, that was the thought. But
he is living your undergrad voice teacher's ideal career track right now,
which is what I thought I wanted.
Yeah,
but here's the piece that's interesting is we were talking to him about it, and he was talking about like, and not to, I hope this isn't like insider or anything like that. But basically, like, what the culture is kind of turning to in 2018 is that a lot of people that hire and that do auditions for things are looking for multifaceted people.
For sure.
And it's kind of wild to hear that from the perspective of, like, if I'd been in my career 20 years ago, I'd be doing exactly what I needed to be doing, but it's changing under my feet, and it's kind of an interesting, that's,
yeah, he had like a you know, interesting, like, come to Jesus moment of, like, oh wow, so it's actually not good that all I post about is opera, and I actually need to diversify what I talk about in my social media. And it's just wild, like, this has been a conversation that's been going on for years and years and years of, like, you know, not only do we have to be, like, this ideal specimen of an opera singer and, like, you know, sing perfectly every day and walk into every audition and be, you know, Dawn Upshaw or Kiri Takanawa or Pavarotti or, you know, Fischer Dieskau or whatever, but not only that, but you also have to be well-read, and you also have to...
speak, you know, three languages.
Yeah, and
five languages.
And you also, you know, you also have to know what memes are, and it's like it's
wild.
It's a lot.
Yeah. Well, and so that's kind of the thing that I think is really cool about this project. And also something that, you know, so I went to Roosevelt for my master's.
I went to Roosevelt for undergrad.
Nice. I graduated 3 years ago, but I've always, like, known of a ton of people. Sorry, my mom is calling me for my birthday, I guess.
Oh, by the way, everyone. Really nice. Happy birthday!
It's Daniel's birthday,
and he is so gracious to welcome to us for this interview.
You should close your laptop.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I don't need it. That's satisfying.
Do you want to talk to your mom on air?
That is actually not a terrible idea, but... so here's what I want to actually ask, though. I missed the call.
Sorry, Mom.
The thing that's interesting about DePaul is I feel like I know of so many people from DePaul because they have a certain, and, you know, like, I think that some people from Roosevelt have this too. And so it might just be like an outsider perspective where, like, you only see the people that, like, take that step out thing. But I've felt very much like DePaul, like, maybe just because it's in the heart of the city like that, especially in the heart of the North Side. A lot of folks from DePaul have that, like, I'm going to try to do something different that's kind of engaged with the city. Is that something that you feel as DePaul grads? Like,
I do. So my personal experience, I went to DePaul for undergrad and graduated a year and a half ago.
Yeah, that's, it has crazy. Been a year and a half. Well, for me too.
And I did a lot at school, you know, recitals and choir and opera and things. But it's fairly limited in what you can explore. And I did try to do other things when I wasn't in the operas, and they weren't as receptive to it as we would have hoped.
I agree.
So what I learned very quickly was, if this isn't going to give me what I want, I have to go make it for myself. Which I think is the most valuable thing I learned in school, was make your own opportunities.
I think we all bonded over that we're these, like, classically trained people, but we're kind of like weirdos, is that we don't want to stay in that genre all
exclusively
the time.
Maybe, you know, I think there's more that we can explore that school didn't maybe allow us to do all the time.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And now we have the freedom in a city like this to make cabarets. We've all done a cabaret on our own this year.
We have, yeah. We've all done cabarets at Davenport's.
Cool.
Me and Anna did a show together that was kind of like a... It was a big learning curve, I think, for the both of us. There's a lot of stuff going
definitely,
on. And
definitely.
The show was kind of like our coming out party, as, like, we're here, we're artists, we're messy, and our life is, like, crazy, but guess what? We're amazing singers.
Well, one thing that's been really powerful for me in exploring some of these self-made opportunities is that I grew up not with opera, but with musical theater and with White Christmas and with all of these songs that are just a part of my childhood, like the fabric of how I was raised. And I came to opera when I entered undergrad. it was, okay, I want to study music. Oh, this is the path. It's classical music. It's opera. And so always in the back of my mind was all of this other music, musical theater, all of that. And I felt very happy and comfortable with the fact that I was focusing my efforts in school on classical music and opera. But in the back, there was always this voice that said, that's not the only thing you want to do, because I grew up with all of this other music that gives me that nostalgic feeling. Mm-hmm. And so it seems very natural to me to do projects like this. This is as true to who I am as any aria that I might sing.
The biggest thing is that singing a musical theater piece or a cabaret piece, it's not a lesser form of art because it's not an aria. And I think that's something that we've all had to come to terms with, or I have at least, is that just because this isn't from an opera doesn't make it any less in value or make me less of a performer performing it because it's not in a classical nature. I don't know if anyone else has felt that, but I've gotten that from not to call out my family, but just like, you know, that opera is this shining beacon of perfection and grace, which it is. You have to be a certain level of perfection and grace to like make it through a day, but it doesn't make you less of a performer to want to do small shows like this and mm-hmm. experiment with new music. Yeah,
I grew up in my family's, or not my family's, in my dad's bluegrass band. And it was a rude awakening once I got to college, where my undergrad voice teacher, in no uncertain terms, told me, you know, that's all well and good, and I'm glad that that experience made you, like, a good performer, but you can't sing that while you're here, because you have to focus on opera.
That's such a shame.
I know. So well, yeah. I mean, it was 2008 in a music conservatory. Mm-hmm. And, like, so it's, I think that people, especially around our age, are, you know, kind of all, you know, I think that the way that y'all put it of like kind of like a coming out party of like, we don't just sing opera. I think that for a lot of artists our age, there does have to be some level of coming out where you're like taking, you know, shedding this veneer of like, oh yes, I do so enjoy that 1987 recording of Rigoletto with blah blah blah, and you could just be like, oh my god, that Katy Perry song is just everything to me right now. Or oh, have you seen the Thank You Next video? Like, I think that it's something that every artist right now is just kind of coming to terms with, like, yeah, I can like more than one thing, I can focus on more than one thing, and it doesn't make me any less of an artist.
Well, and we have so many boundaries imposed upon us just by the world that I would hope that we're not doing that in our art and in our music, and that we're always keeping an open mind. I think it's actually really good for artists to explore genres or mediums maybe where they're not the most comfortable. I think it, like, for example, I don't sing a lot of pop music, but I think it's good for me sometimes to explore that and see what I can learn about myself in that and surprise myself with, you know, what I'm capable of. And maybe that's not what I'm going to do most of, because it's, you know, maybe I'm a little bit better at something else, but it's valuable work. It's valuable to explore those different things. My undergrad had a very strong musical theater program. Baldwin Wallace University.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, an incredible music theater program. And when I was there from 2005 to 2010, the opera program wasn't quite at the level of the musical theater program. So I was in a department that was growing and changing. And I like to think that some of the feedback that my peers and I provided helped to create a shift in the quality of the program there because of some of the demands that we made about the things we thought we should be getting. But in any case, the point of this is that the musical theater students were required to do a classical music recital.
Ooh.
And the idea being that they needed this foundation. And of course they did.
Of course.
And I think maybe we can look at it in the other way too. I think classical singers need the experience of singing other things to inform, you know, how they treat text, because when you're singing an aria in a language that maybe you don't speak, you know, do you really get how to connect to that text if you haven't done that with your own language in something that's contemporary to your own culture?
I completely agree. And something that I think a lot about, and I've been trying to put into words to some extent, is the othering that really happens when you study opera. Like, the othering, the self-imposed othering. Do you know what I mean by that? Mm-hmm. Where, like, we... There's, like, an elitism thing that happens, and I mean, there are obviously, like... It's the moment of when you do any kind of, like, study abroad program, or any time that you sing something in English, and you realize that the immediacy of your audience understanding the language is a completely different game. Like, it's a completely different performance thing.
For sure.
And not to, you know, I'm not over here poo-pooing the idea of singing things in other languages for an audience, but I think it's interesting that it's something that I think it's a trend with people that study classical singing, that there's a degree to which that kind of, like, bridge is really, because I completely agree with what you're saying, like, it's a two-way street. Like, you can't just, if, and I think that, you know, saying, like, that it's a two-way street is giving more power to opera than before, like, giving more power to the tradition than before, mm-hmm. because it's not saying oh, opera is just a separate thing that needs to be. It's saying, like, it's part of a larger artistic ecosystem, and it should be treated that way. And I think, because there's, like, a myth that if you explore and try something different, that you are shunning what you did before. But that, that is the piece that I really hope is being taken seriously in these conversations of, like, well, artists should be more well-rounded. It's like, well, they should be more well-rounded because... Even if you are monofocused, like, what is mono in 2018? What is monofocused without focusing on the culture that you're making art in?
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing that for? You're a museum. You're just all that you are. And there isn't anything inherently wrong with that. But it's an interesting, especially in Chicago, especially being, like, people that went to a city school where you have that kind of, like, immediate seeing what your art plays, how it plays a part in a bigger sphere.
And I think it's just, like, a common misconception that opera singers can't cross over.
Right.
Or they feel like they shouldn't. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a boundary that we're trying to break, especially, you know, in our cabaret shows. There's definitely moments where we're pulling out our opera stops for specific things and showing, be like, that's the core of who we are. I don't think... We were talking about this at our rehearsal on Friday when we were discussing, like, how to sing this a cappella piece. And Anna, poor Anna, is singing, like, a high A on the top, and she's like, I can't, like, straight tone this, like, the Andrew sister. I was like, we don't have to be just, like...
I was like, can I sing a little bit more?
Yeah, and we're like, yes, please. Right. Like, we will sing, like, so that's it. We don't have to hide the fact that we have larger voices, and the fact that we need to have vibrato on our top, or the fact that I need to, like, change how I do things to, like, sing in the basement and give color. Like, there shouldn't, that shouldn't be a weakness. If anything, that makes us stronger artists, and it shows those different levels that we have because we did study opera, which I think gave us all, like, a really great foundation, and I'm grateful for that. But it is, I think, a misconception that, like, opera singers can't sing jazz, or or they should be, you should be able to manipulate your voice as an artist and create things, you know.
Absolutely. And it's a very interesting thing, and I'm really glad that we've had this conversation, because it really contextualizes my next specific question for you, which is, what is very apparent is that you've chosen an identity with Peppermint Patties. There's, like, a full, like, it's very thoughtful. It's very, like, there are so many pieces in play, and they're on display. And I think that's really interesting in this conversation, when it's both exploratory from what you know, but it's also, you've picked footholds, you know? You've picked, like, this, we're gonna go with a style, we're gonna go with an identity. And I'm curious, that I think is something that isn't talked about enough, is that balance between, okay, like, we wanna do something different, right? But we also wanna find, like a structure. Mm-hmm. You know, that balance is really tricky. And so I'm kind of curious if that's something that was thought about at all, or...
You wanna take that?
Sure. Well, I think with finding a structure, I think we leaned on Andrew Sisters because everyone knows what that is. Mm-hmm. And we know what that looks like and how it sounds. And then how can we take that and change it to show what we can do? So we're singing musical theater, we're singing more operatically, and we're changing how people even view that one art. I don't like to be pigeonholed in any way in my life. I've learned that about myself recently.
And
so, you know, we come on and sing this jazzy Jingle Bell song at the top of the show, which is very Andrew Sisters, and then we jump off and sing something totally, totally different, and we want to surprise people the whole time. And I think we shouldn't be ashamed of, this is kind of jumping on everything we just said, is I want to be able to sing anything, but I also want to be proud of the training that I've done, and that I don't have to completely change my voice to sing this song versus this song, you know?
Right.
You should be able to embellish a musical theater song with your classical voice.
I agree.
Not be ashamed of that.
Definitely.
And vice versa.
Something that my undergrad voice teacher once told me that, you know, as previously mentioned, she had her shortcomings, but I think that something that she told me that has really stuck with me is that, you know, she had a very unique, you know, technique, and she in her career was asked to sing many different styles, and she found great success in doing that. What she always said was, yeah, if somebody wanted me to come sing Mahler, I would just sing it in my voice, and the reviews would say, wow, she really understands Mahler. And then I would be asked to sing Bach, and I would just sing it in my voice, and then the reviewers would say, wow, she really understands Bach. And it's like, you know, I think, and she said, as long as you sing whatever you're singing in your voice, it's gonna sound right. And so having to alter how you sound to fit into whatever box you think you need to fit into, don't do it. Just sing your voice and you're gonna pull it off. And that is such an empowering message. Like, we're told time and time again, like, oh, in order to sing Bach, you have to back off. You gotta be light and floaty, and there's, you know, don't put any extra weight on it. But it's like, yeah, but in some cases, and for some people's voices, like, if you pull, you know, you lose all your support or whatever, and then it just sounds flaky and weird. And, you know, for some people, when they're called upon to sing larger rep, they can't, you know, they add too much weight, and then they, you know, lose all their resonance. And I think that just approaching whatever you're doing using those foundational skills that you have, that you've worked so hard for, like, that's paramount.
That's, I think, above that's everything else. Like, for us especially, we have a really great blend. I think us three, we were rehearsing and kind of mixing things, like, we're not one voice. Like, you can definitely distinguish who's who, but we all have a good way of just, like, kind of bleeding into one another. And we're new. We're still trying to figure out, like, you know, the balance of things sometimes, which is totally acceptable, I think, at the stage that we're at. But, and that's the thing, when we had rehearsal on Friday, and she was like, I can't sing this, it's so high. I mean, she can sing it, it's amazing. But
excuse
we're like,
me, I'm a soprano.
And I'm like, then we need to help you and balance you on the bottom. You know, like, it's a team effort.
Yeah, figuring out how to navigate these different styles with our voices requires teamwork.
And we all have such different voices.
Deciding what works the best.
Like, Laura's belt is like crazy town. I had never heard her belt in school, and then she did her cabaret.
I never got to belt in school.
It was so good. She did her cabaret show, and I was like, holy shit. Like, she could be the next, like, musical theater star. Both of these can. And I haven't really done much belting ever, and I'm still trying to work on that. My training has been, like, classical only. So I'm trying to find, like, my more, like, jazz musical theater sound, and that's been a challenge for me. But, like, the two ladies on my left and on my right, like, they've just been inspiring me about this, like, new, like, belty sound, which, if you come to our show, you'll hear, especially in Let It Go. We're doing, like, a really cool version of Let It Go, and Laura has, like, some amazing, you know, solos and stuff in it. And, like, also, we're fucking funny. Like, I think another, I mean, like, we're just, like, trailing off, but comedy is, like, a shtick, I think, of ours.
Well, because I think one of our goals, too, here is to create something that is unapologetically joyful and a good time. And certainly, we are very passionate artists and activists and want to be, you know, putting forth a certain message, but we also want to bring joy, because you know, in these times, I think people need that.
And we need that.
And I think it's, you know, above all, we want this experience not only for us as performers to be joyful and freeing, but we hope that our audience members feel that way too, that they're hearing something that gives them the good feels because it's nostalgic or because it's beautiful or because it's funny or, you know, whatever it might be.
Or here's a really shitty story that happened to me. Let me tell you guys about it and find like a humor, you know, some sort of funny twist to it, which we did for our show, talking about auditions and like the process or things that were said to you in auditions. And we made like a whole bit on stuff like that. And it just helps heal those wounds, I think, for us as performers too, is just bring those like weird things that have happened to us in the open and also inform the audience that maybe doesn't know that that happens.
It's an interesting, I think about that more and more lately, like especially with Forte Chicago, where there are certain things where I go like, wow, the thing that's really interesting about the space of a bunch of singers getting together and figuring out how to collaborate on telling a message is that it's also, it empowers each like them with each other to tell stories, like, of, because it's an interesting thing. So the thing that I think a lot about opera is that in a lot of ways, like, the individualist nature of it is both a blessing and a curse, because it's one thing, like, it's really great to be able to focus on your individual identity and figure out, you know, what you want to be putting out as an artist individually and all these things. But in a lot of ways too, it also creates a state in which all opera singers are kind of beholden to whatever organizing body decides to exist. So like, if you as an individual make your own decisions, right? But like, then all of these systems and structures that are in place, you know, like the one most recent that people probably know about is the movement that's going on right now behind abolishing audition fees.
Yeah, I heard about that.
And it's like, this is a very relatable, like, dare I say, political movement of, you know, people that are singers are for the most part poor or like trying to, you know what I mean? Like, and it's, it, and maybe not, you know, to, it's, so that's an interesting piece. And I think about that a lot. And I think that it's an interesting thing too, because so many artists in this moment find themselves entering this space where they're collaborating and you, these, this kind of ends up going hand in hand where you go, oh, I really want to work with others to build something. And then all of a sudden you realize like, wow, we've gone through a lot of similar things. And so I'm curious, the thing that I was originally going to ask about, and then I got like down a political rabbit hole. So sorry about that.
I mean, like, it's 2018.
So yeah.
Welcome.
The thing that I'm really curious about is like how, as people that kind of like have developed that individual identity, what it means for you to collaborate and kind of how you best work together to tell a message or a story.
Oh man, I don't know.
Well, I can plug Forte for a second because I just did a show with them and it was so freeing.
It was so good.
It was so freeing and exciting because it's sketch and improv, but it's with female opera singers who we all have this weird niche world that we all know about and have those shared experiences that most of the people in the audience have some idea of, but maybe not exactly. So we could sing a song about how crazy dress codes are, or how we all rabbit hole about headshots and auditions and listening to other singers online, which you should never do.
Never, ever, ever do.
It is so empowering to know that there are other people in your court that know how you feel about this weird, weird world, whatever genre you're in, you know, but then you can tell great stories with it and you can skew the stories depending on the audience that you have, and you can surprise people with how relatable it is, really. Like, we think of ourselves as having this weird offshore existence that nobody else understands, but everyone has something in their life with their career that doesn't make anybody make any sense to anyone else. But when you break it down to the emotions and the storytelling, everyone can connect to it. So I think I've really valued that working with Forte and working with these two, and the cabaret that I did is, how can we take this thing that seems so overwhelming and give it perspective and give it new meaning and sort of release it from your life and then share it with other people. So I mean, that's why I'm in music in the first place, right. is storytelling. Mm-hmm. I feel the most free on stage.
Same.
Because people actually listen.
Right. It's like, well, it's free, cheaper than therapy. Heidi Houston. and like the other people that are singing with us, my friend Wesley, who's like our guest artist on our next show, I met through Instagram. So that's like my big platform. And as a self-promoter, we're all three of us are in the business of self-promotion and being our own, you know, managers and developers and financial advisors. We're all three of us are all independently, you know, involved in that as solo singers. And like through the Instagram community, being a self-promoter, I've met incredible people, and Wesley's one of them.
I actually do want to kind of touch a little bit on that, because that is something that I realize now that is unique to your experience, and to, it's an interesting thing, because the world of, especially pre-Facebook, Instagram, mm-hmm. that was like a completely different space.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where like you could get really far just having a strong brand, like in 2013, 14. Yeah. And it's weird to see. The thing that I think is really interesting is then it was like, you know, your best bet was like you got a sponsored post with a coffee shop or something like mm-hmm. that, and that was great, like when people did that, and it was something that could work. But because that space doesn't entirely, I mean, there are still people that definitely do that, but like because the space isn't the same anymore, it's very much like, that is what, when people kind of go out, step forth and try and make it an individual entity, like that is something that everybody has to kind of think about now, just existing on any social media platform, is like thinking about brand, thinking about kind of like visual and multimedia mm-hmm. Identity and things like that. Oh, I don't have an actual question. Well,
I was like, there was one
all the time.
There definitely was. Well,
what's the balance?
I can piggyback on that and maybe ask Dinah a question,
sure.
which is, or you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like one of the reasons that your Instagram has been so successful, and certainly Wesley's has been so successful, is that what you're putting forth is very consistent mm-hmm. content, and you've really streamlined your, should I say, image mm-hmm. In that regard. And perhaps there's something to be learned from that experience about how singers as individuals, or you know, opera companies, or any mm-hmm. organization, the Peppermint Patties, like how can we take this culture of Instagram and, you know, put forth our message on that? And I think consistency in content is probably key. And I don't know if that's something that the listeners are interested in, but
I mean, it's, I feel like the listeners, everybody has an Instagram account. Everybody would love, I mean, maybe not everybody would love to have the kind of, I mean, Wesley has like 45,000 followers on Instagram. I don't have that many, but he's definitely more, he's a photographer full time. So his brand is very beautiful. I mean, it's just well constructed, beautiful. He goes on trips and like does amazing things and does portraits and stuff like that. And he's incredibly talented, but he's also a musician. So I'm just like doing like a sidebar.
Yeah,
he wanted to make his Chicago debut because he's never done a Chicago show before, and he's been going to the Lyric premiere nights with me as an influencer for like 3 years, and I was like, you should just come sing for our show, because he's never done anything like that.
He's gonna kill it.
It's so good.
Wesley, we love you.
He's an incredible singer. He's like gospel musical theater kind of style, and he's never sung live in Chicago, so this is kind of like a big deal for him. And we just welcomed him into our like weird little family and came up with like a really decent show. But going back to like, I guess, Instagram and streamlining things, mine, I think the biggest thing is, yeah, finding this like consistent brand, but that also is very relatable and real. And I think like my personal one, I don't hide anything really from my personal one. I guess you won't see me like maybe how I look like in the morning on mine necessarily. Like you won't see that side of me, but I'm very open with things that happen. And I always ask permission from my husband if I'm posting something about us or something about him or something that's going on, so that, you know, I don't break any barriers with him. But I'm definitely very open. Like, if I'm having a really bad day, I'll just throw it up there. Mm-hmm. And I think that's... And I tried, like, the sponsored posts for my followers. And they're just not into it because they don't follow me to get brands. They're following me for, like, fun things and, like, music and, like, things that I do in Chicago. They don't want to buy shit from me. They don't care about that. Like, that's not who I am. Mm-hmm. It's definitely more for just, like, the everyday, I think, experience and putting out, like, beautiful content and being like, look, it's my cat sitting on my lap and drooling. Like, I don't know why. People just, like... It's nice to see that side of things, that you're not always going to, like, these fancy meetups and, like, which I've done, and go to restaurants and, like, for the Instagram, like, meetups, we would all be standing over this, like, gorgeous table of food with our phones, like, over the table for, like, 45 minutes before we could actually eat the meal that was on the table. And I'm like, oh, this is crazy.
It's also, the thing that's really interesting about it, too, is it's one of these things where I remember creating on Instagram 4 years ago and feeling so, like, it was so not relevant to what I was doing in school.
Yeah.
And now it's, like, there is no, like, how could, like exactly, most artists have to have one. Like, in fact, like, you know, like, doesn't Joyce have, like, a really strong Instagram?
Oh, Joyce isn't, her Instagram, like, is amazing.
Nadine Sierra also has a very active Instagram.
It's kind of wild to see how mainstream it's gotten.
Because you need to see the backstage stuff. That's what people want to see.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They want to see that you went to yoga that morning instead of taking a bath and... You know what I mean? Like, they assume that you do a certain thing, but it's like, really, I really went to yoga and just sweated my butt off and then napped for 5 hours and then I sang an opera. Like, but that's what they want to see. They want to see you do those things. Or maybe a backstage shot of a rehearsal. That's what I want to see when I'm following artists like that. I want to see those process things. Like, the actual, like, post in the grid. I'm like, that's cool. But I rather interact with their stories and see, like, the rehearsal process or a costume process or something funny. Mm-hmm. Like a stupid, like the lip, Jamie Barton does these, like, lip singing things on her. Oh my God. She's hysterical.
So, I love the Stephanie Blythe ukulele stuff too.
It's so, it's just showing them as people. And I think that's what I love of where Instagram is going right now.
Well, and the reason why I'm going this is because I'm feeling for some reason wanting to go in depth about what it's like to have side projects, because I know that you also do a ton of admin work.
I do. Like,
and I think that's so also really interesting. Well, because, like, admin. It's the stuff that I, as a journalist, it's my birthday, I'm going to do what I want to do. And the stuff that I always find really interesting is the stuff that people don't talk about, which is, like, you know, you've been doing stuff with Fringe for a while. Are you still doing stuff with Fringe?
Yeah.
And were you also doing stuff with COT?
Yeah, I work... That's my day job, is at COT, doing marketing. And then I'm the development director at Fringe.
So I want to... and feel free to kind of, like, chime in with other past experiences, too. But I want to kind of touch on that because I'm curious, like, as you've... You know, I mean, this is still... Peppermint Patties is still 4 months old.
Yeah.
But kind of as you've been developing this and developing a personal project and something that you've built yourself, like, how has that experience kind of influenced the way that you're building something?
Well, Dinah's been our PR head for this project, but personally, I'm building the COT brand every day on our Instagram and our photography and our website and everything. And then Fringe, I don't do brand as much, except that's how... You know, in development, that's how you talk to your donors or how you talk to sponsorships, and you have to have a very clean, precise way of talking about what's important to you. So and then in this, it's more like we do videos and it's pictures and it's personal, and that's when I get my like my own side joy, is doing my own cabarets with friends, and that keeps me alive and going.
Right.
Because admin is really tough and it drains you a lot, and sometimes you don't see the results forever. Or ever, and you maybe never get credit for the stuff you do. So I really have appreciated that this is part of my own brand. You know, all the side projects are not something off on the side that nobody ever, like, that's part of who I am. And I get to be a part of it, you know. Because sometimes in admin, you stay behind the scenes and nobody sees you, and that's okay. But this is what keeps me going and gives me joy. sure.
And I think when we actually thought that this was actually going to work, which was like a month in where I was like, this could actually be something like real.
Yeah, that has legs. Yeah, that we can actually do
something with. That's when I made our Facebook page and I made an Instagram account like 3 days ago. So it hasn't been that long, but we did a photo shoot with Wes because he's an amazing photographer and our photos came out super cute.
Those photos are gorgeous.
Yeah, we had a rehearsal at Anna's gorgeous apartment and we're like, hey, Wes, can you bring your camera and be awesome and take some photos of us? And he did an incredible job. And now we have this incredible content, you know, to promote the show. And when I was creating our Facebook page, I asked everybody for bios, like meet the Peppermint Patties, meet Laura if you read those. And I specifically wanted like an upbeat, fun, sarcastic, kind of like real life look at who we are. Not like Laura Smalley, soprano, sang at blah, 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 blah in 2012. Like, mm-hmm. I don't want that. I don't, you know, like that. Like,
I don't have a bio like that.
I mean, like, as much as I love the experience that we all three of us have, I wanted to be like, yes, we're working soloists in the city, but what else? Like, social media guru, we love coffee, I have an unhealthy obsession with my cat, I make my husband take photos for my Instagram, and I belt Wicked in my car. Like, I wanted this, like, fun, upbeat, sarcastic tone to our Facebook page so that people are like, you know what, that's funny, you know, and just kind of see us as people and not just, like, as these, like, I don't know, little women running around or something. I don't know how to describe
yeah,
it.
That's... Sorry, my voice is like...
Yeah, well, and the idea, too, that we have a sense of humor about what we are doing, that we don't take ourselves too seriously. Like, we are serious artists, but, again, and I'm just going to keep saying this, like, this is about joy for me. Like, no, I'm doing this because I am so grateful to have an outlet for music that is just a joyful experience.
It's been a blast.
And, you know, we've had our growing pains in figuring out, you know, what goes into putting a show like this together and how we all work together, and when we need to make decisions about an arrangement or about, you know, whatever it might be, like a cut that we're doing, or, you know, maybe we're having a difficult time like getting a harmony to work. Mm-hmm. You know, we're figuring out how we work together, and like there's growing pains to that. But ultimately, like at the end of every rehearsal, I try to think, first of all, I just got to sing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. With people that I really like and care about. And we're singing music that is beautiful, but also just so fun and happy. I mean, what Christmas is about, you know, the good feels. And also, we get to be in control of the experience, and it's just empowering and awesome.
I think that's
and
a big thing.
I think I got on a tangent with that.
No, it's nice to be like in charge of our own shit. It's like, it's a really scary task, you know, because we have to do everything ourselves, which is fine.
And sometimes that means like text messages at 10 o'clock at night. Like, do you think this is the right, like, are these the right syllables for the scat section? Yeah. Like, here, let me send you a video from my car of me singing the scat section. Is that right? Should we do it that way? Like, sometimes it's crazy processes like that.
Yeah. Or my husband being like, am I seeing you this week? I'm like, no, I spend more time with like these two ladies than with my husband, which I'm not complaining about. I love you all very much. My husband's like, where are you? I'm like, I don't know. I'm making music. But that's a big thing that I think is great about us, is that we're these like three really incredibly strong ladies in our own ways. And I think that's what makes us work. I think we're all on an equal playing field. There's not one person between the three of us that isn't bringing some, you know what I mean? Like, isn't, no one's like trailing behind. I feel like everybody's like, we're all on the same level.
A true collaboration.
Yeah. And we all have something really awesome to bring to the table. And when everybody performs separately, it's just as amazing as when we're performing together. And I think that's really special, that each individual is just as strong as the other one. Because you see like a lot of groups, I mean, Pentatonix, like I'm calling them out because they're like, or like a group like that.
They're really famous. They can take it.
Let's go.
They're ready. We're taking you. But just like that, I mean, they're all equally talented, but you can kind of tell who carries that group. Do you know what I mean? Like, you can. Yeah. So, I mean, but like the three, I mean, there's only three of us and not five of us, but the three of us are all so strong that we know when to give in. give and take and stuff like that.
So I would love to talk about the specifics of the show.
Yay! Sorry.
So, yes. No, I'm like, this has been an awesome conversation, but we would be remiss not to promote the actual show. So what is this, what's it called? Like, when is it? Like, what kind of music are you gonna be singing?
I'm going to give that to Laura.
Okay. I'm going to use my NPR voice. This Wednesday, December 19th, at the Davenport's Cabaret Piano Bar. It's called A Very Christmas Cabaret with the three of us and Wes and
Heidi
Jostin is our pianist, who is brilliant. Hi, Heidi. And it's about an hour or so. Yeah. You know, that's usually kind of how Davenport's shows work. And it's a mix of secular, sacred Christmas tunes and holiday tunes and trios and solos. And
it's also, there's quite a bit of a cappella.
Yeah.
In addition to the pieces that Heidi is accompanying.
Yeah. And so, we want to have a well-rounded show that has a little bit of everything for everybody and shows us off as singers, too.
So, yeah, you definitely get, like, the good feels, the jingle bells, and, like, kind of the classic, like, jazzy Andrew Sisters. And then we all kind of, like, pull apart my first cabaret songs from A New World, Surabaya Santa. So I'm like, it's nuts. And then, she's doing, like, Laura's doing something from Elf, the musical. Yep.
I'll be singing something from The Muppet Christmas Carol, which is the definitive Christmas Carol.
The best Christmas Carol.
Absolutely. I have to say, I hope no one disagrees with me, but there it is.
No disagreement here.
Yeah, it's the best. So we're all, and so we're all kind of, like, pulling things from, and then we kind of have, like, a serious section? Like, just talking about the harder side of Christmas, not the jingle bell side.
Right. I mean, because it's very present on my mind, like, the harder side of Christmas. I sang a gig yesterday at a retirement community, and I sang Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, and, like, it was like in the memory care ward, and like half of the people were crying during it. And
I'm getting like, that's...
And it was just like, it was so like, it's really kind of, if you have a good relationship with the holidays, it's like very easy to forget that like, it's really hard for some people, but then like when it hits you, it hits you. Mm-hmm. I don't really have a question regarding that. It's just like, I guess I'm just like happy that that's being addressed.
Well, the one thing I kind of want to, I've been thinking about, I always think about this a lot, especially with programming, but like kind of like thinking about what's a guiding principle for your programming. And so specifically the thing that I think is really interesting with the holiday concert is like, how do you tie, especially in this exploratory space that you find yourselves in, like, how do you tie it in? Like, how has that, do you have something that you've kind of, like, that's been your North Star of, like, here's how the direction we're generally trying to go in?
I would say that we don't have anything on our program that we don't relate to. Like, there's nothing that we're singing on the program that we feel like just sort of obligated to include because it's a Christmas concert and we must do this. Everything that we're putting forth, we have some sort of a personal connection to, and therefore I hope that that will read to the audience with a sense of authenticity and sincerity about what we're singing. I'm talking about the duality of the emotional side of Christmas. I mean, that this is the first Christmas for me. I'm just going to get real for a second. It's the first Christmas for me in 32 years that I will not be going home to be with my family. And so when I sing, I'll be home for Christmas, there's something under the surface there for me. And this is a wonderful experience for me to, you know, have a Christmas moment and to be in a space with people and share all of this music and kind of fill that space in my heart and, you know, to have that moment. So when I was thinking about programming, I was thinking about, you know, what do I want to hear this Christmas? Mm-hmm. What's going to fill that space in my heart? And so that's how I feel about
Should
that.
Should we go like one by one maybe?
Yeah. Sure. Okay. Maybe not one particular North Star. I guess the Andrew Sisters are kind of our inspiration, so there's some thing to that.
Yeah.
You know, that led us to where can we find the best arrangements of the songs.
Yeah, we did a lot of, like, research on best arrangements, mm-hmm. for sure.
And then how can we make those arrangements ours on top of that? And then I always like to pick things that nobody's ever heard of, or that's what my senior recital was like a bunch of weird stuff that nobody had heard of. So, you know, my brother was in the Elf, the musical in Des Moines. Shout out to Andrew. and I heard the song and I was like, that's precious. And it's about how weird dating is, especially around any time of the year, but holidays. And I was like, perfect. I'll sing that song.
That's too real.
It's fun, you know? So it's finding the pockets of this story of this season that don't always get addressed and that connect to us personally.
Mm-hmm.
And that just, you know, selfishly, like, they're fun to sing and they're fun to listen to. So it's a mix of what Anna said and just the fun stuff for us too.
Mm-hmm. Whew, there is a lot of weight around dating around the holidays, because everything, like, every date that you go on, you're like, do I have to
my family?
Or like
presents? How do you?
Yeah, exactly. Like, this is our second date in 2 weeks.
Is that present
before Christmas? Do I get you a present?
Yeah,
I know. You said you're gluten free. Should I bring you a gluten free cookie?
Like, the hard hitting questions.
Exactly. Like, I'm hanging out with my brother after this. Do you want to come?
That's real.
Oof.
Sorry, I didn't want to interrupt you.
If anybody's looking to find a place to bring a date around Christmas, come to the Christmas Cabaret. This is a great.
We'll bring you some real talk.
This Wednesday.
It's only an hour long, so if it doesn't go well.
At 8 p.m.
You don't even have to talk during it. It's great.
Yeah, exactly. You could just sit there and drink.
Yes. Sorry,
silently.
Dinah, totally
multiple drinks with a date that you barely know. Perfect. You don't have to say anything to each other.
Oh my God. And then you can just part ways.
And then you just leave.
Yeah.
After like 3 cocktails.
Oh, amazing.
Or leave together. Really, it really could go either way. We'll put you in a good mood at our show, I think, for sure. We're doing some fun stuff. Anyway, I don't even know what we were talking about.
Oh, what's your North Star?
Ooh. I was like, what is it? I think, again, selfishly, like, what's fun? What are things that just have brought me joy in the show? And things that I mean, like, other things that we're like, I know we would sound good on this. There was definitely some things where we chose because I knew we would sound great doing it together, and I was just, you know, we were just like, we should do this because we'll sound amazing. And then once it was in, we've actually rehearsed it a few times. You can feel the bonds kind of happening, especially with our tones. I mean, I guess with my solo specifically, Anna told me to sing Surabaya Santa from Song from a New
because
World.
Because I knew she would just kill it.
And
it'd be great.
It's hilarious because I love singing with, like, weird, crazy accents and kind of having this, like, these bizarre characters. Because as a mezzo in opera, you're always playing a bizarre character. And that's been the most fun for me. Like, I'm always angry or drunk or a boy or a witch. It's like witch, bitch, and britches, right, for mezzos. So I love having that freedom to be like 6 different people in one, and that's what Surabaya Santa kind of does. And then the other song I chose, I actually heard on a Barbara Streisand Christmas album, because who doesn't love some Babs?
Absolutely.
And it's I Remember from
Evening Primrose
by Sondheim.
I love that song.
Yeah, and I forgot about that song.
She put it on a Christmas album. I have heard so many 15-year-olds sing that song.
Well, it's in the anthology, and I think it's in number 3. It's in the musical theater anthology, but without the introduction that has Christmas reference.
Oh.
So this is a part, if you're familiar with the song, she's going to be singing a part of it that you've probably never heard.
Yeah. And it references that you wake up on Christmas morning, and then she goes into this, like, reminiscence of basically everyday things. Trees, snow, sky,
well,
people.
Because this is the girl who lives in a shopping mall.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's like a mannequin, right?
Yeah.
And she comes to life.
And she's never been outside. But, I mean, I'm taking it kind of, yes, I'm trying to, you know, envelop that character, but also kind of this idea that, you know, from January until November, we're just kind of like skating by things. I feel like life gets crazy and this happens and that happens and this happens and this bad thing happens and you recover and then more bad shit happens and then you recover. And this is kind of like a song for me to just take a moment and just be like, look at the sky. It's there and it's blue and it's amazing. And the trees and snow. As much as we bitch about snow in Chicago, that like first snowfall is always like, come on, it's always magical. Yeah, it's always magical. And just taking that time to really just sit with those feelings. I got married 2 months ago and we haven't really had time to just like sit and be like, we're married. That's significant because we just like went on with our daily lives. So this Christmas is our first Christmas as a married couple. And I'm like, that's like a big thing. And to not miss that because of gigs and not miss that because of work or because of, you know, whatever else is going on and the bullshit and whatever's on, you know, the news and because it's awful and horrible every day. And just like sit with your husband or with your friends and just like be there and be present there. And I think that's something that we miss the other 11 months out of the year until we get to Christmas Eve and we're like, where did that... We were just saying that. How is it Christmas already? Yeah. Where did this year go? Mm-hmm. What did we do? You know? So that's a lot wrapped up in one, like, 3-minute song. But
yeah,
that's kind of like... And I think that's why I'm trying to make... for me, to make this group something is to, like, really be present in something and not just, like, skate through things and really create something. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool. Well,
sorry, guys.
No, not at all. It was great.
It's why you're here. We're here to talk about the stuff.
So we have a few minutes left, actually.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
And actually, we've run a little over. Sorry. But it's been really fun.
Yeah.
That's always a good thing. The last thing we do with all of our guests is a 1-minute plug for anything they have upcoming. Sometimes that's very obvious, like letting people know where they can attend an upcoming holiday show. Otherwise, we love hearing shout outs to other folks that are doing dope work or any media that you're personally consuming, self-care or otherwise, music, movies, TV shows, things like that.
All right, well, I will go first. I would be remiss if I did not give a shout out to the Janice Concert Series. This is a group that I have both performed with and also am helping with some work behind the scenes. And I don't have any dates just yet because we're not announcing certain things, but there are things that are going to be happening.
You'll have to come back.
And you will have to come back, but please just keep an eye open and ear, you know, to the ground, listening for what the Janice Concert Series is going to be doing, because they're fantastic people. So
nice. I guess I'm going to shout out to a Chicago Fringe Opera. I recently joined the team there like a month ago.
Something like
that. Yeah, like a month ago, doing marketing and social media. So we have some awesome things coming up in the spring, and we also may be doing some really fun more intimate concerts. God bless you. Come February. So I'm just plugging the Chicago local opera scene, and that Fringe is a really special place to see opera, and I'm really excited to be a part of the team and kind of see where that takes us.
Aww. Yeah. I was going to plug that because I always plug them.
But well, I plugged it for you. Now you can plug us.
So I will wrap it up by... Well, I also work for COT, so come to a COT show. But... I would plug our show and anything that's going on in your local area. Davenport's is always great shows going on. I have lots of friends that do cabaret, and you know, explore your neighborhoods. I think, you know, there's always great art going on in Chicago, and that's why I moved here and that's why I'm staying. So, like, this Wednesday, December 19th,
8 p.m.
8 p.m. at Davenport's. Come see a very Christmas cabaret.
Woo! There'll be a sing-along component.
There
at
will
some
be
point.
A sing-along audience component. So come warmed up.
So don't come with like a mouthful of like rice, please.
Yeah, no. Perfect. Yeah. And also be a few cocktails in, because it'll just make it better.
Yeah. Cool.
Cool. Well, thank you all so much for listening. I've been Dan Johansson.
I continue to be Maureen Smith.
If you want to keep up with what we are up to, there are so many ways you can do that. The first is to head over to scopymag.com. That's our website. We post all of our articles and podcast episodes there. You can also find us on social media, on Facebook. We have a Facebook page called Scopy Magazine. We also have a Facebook group that we love and adore called Sounding Board, where we talk about local arts, local politics, and astrology memes. otherwise, we have an Instagram, Twitter, and Tumblr under Scopy Mag, spelled the same way as the website, SCAPIMAG. And you can also find the podcast, The one you're listening to right now under most podcast places, including Google Play, iTunes Podcasts, and Radio Public under Scoppy Radio.
And as always, I'm here to talk about the importance of subscribing. If you head to our website, scoppymag.com, and go to our subscribe page, there are a couple ways that you can do that. The first is to sign up for email blasts. This is huge because even though we post across social media platforms, Facebook buries our content. So if you want to see 100% of what we're doing and not just 30% of it, you should sign up for those email blasts. The second thing you can do is become a member. For as little as $5 a month, you can help us keep our lights on and pay our artists. If you're in a position to do so, there are some cool incentives for doing that, so give it some thought. Also, if you are a business or an entity, or just have something fun to say, sorry, there's something in my throat, we would love you to advertise with us. If you're interested in doing so, please feel free to reach out to us at scoppymag@gmail.com. So, give a little, give a lot, and if you can't give, then listen, participate, and share.
Cool. Thanks again so much for listening. Go out and make something.
Yep.